Join the Toronto Holocaust Museum and its partners for a community-wide Yom HaShoah commemoration on Sunday, May 5th. A moving evening of film, candlelighting, music, and a tribute to survivors we've recently lost. Keynote speaker Yoni Berus from Yad Vashem will reflect on Holocaust remembrance post-October 7th. The program is at Beth Emeth Synagogue at 7 p.m. Register at torontoholocaustmuseum.org.
Hey everybody, welcome back. I'm Jamie. I'm here with my co-host Gabe. We are the Menschwarmers. Gabe, how you doing, buddy?
You know, I'm doing really well. Our listeners probably going to hear this in the middle of Pesach. We had a great Chametz purge this year. Really nice bonfire. How was yours?
Got to get that burning, sold and burning. Coming along, I guess. A little tricky with two young children who are both eating food now.
Yeah, Cheerios are a big part of our overall. Like, we got to make the swap for Passover Cheerios without him noticing.
Yeah, I guess by the time our listeners are hearing this, we'll already know how it went. But wishing everybody an easy, not fast, but purging of all the delicious food in the world.
I am much more pro matzah than you. As someone
we've talked about this before. As I'm a vegetarian, that so much of what I eat is kitniyot. Passover is a difficult time for my people. My people are vegetarians.
As someone who eats very very little gluten. Mostly for marriage reasons. Passover is sort of a nice solidarity week where the whole world is in solidarity. The whole Jewish world is in solidarity with my wife.
Right.
I've also learned that because it's three or four times the price, gluten-free matzah is also much tastier than regular matzah. It's just sort of a vessel for salt and rosemary, gluten-free matzah, which I'll eat anything on.
That sounds pretty good. So anyways, Chag Sameach to everyone. I hope Passover, everyone's Seder was good. I should say off the top that we are bringing back a tradition we've done twice before. We missed last year. But this episode is the baseball Passover Seder in honor of the coincidence of Passover and the start of the baseball season, more or less. It started 3 weeks ago, but it's a good time to do it as any. So I will be leading the baseball Passover Seder on the second half of the episode. Before then, we want to talk about just Jewish sports news, things that have been going on in the last few weeks since we last talked.
Well, it's a big week for Canadian hockey fans, as every Jewish person, at least in Canada, knows that Seder is often a time to debate your local team in the playoffs and their performance. And the NHL playoffs start, we're recording this slightly before that's going to come out, start on Saturday the 20th. That's in a couple of days. My beloved Toronto Maple Leafs and your beloved Las Vegas Golden Knights are without any
just
Jews
Vegas.
On their
just
teams.
Vegas.
Just Vegas. No Las Vegas. Just Vegas.
Yeah. Just Vegas Golden Knights. Yeah.
Without any notable Jews outside of the ownership suite. But some of the most competitive teams have Jews we've talked about many times. We'll be following closely, the Vancouver Canucks with their captain, Quinn Hughes, who's playing spectacular, leading the team, won their division. The Edmonton Oilers, number two in that same division, Zach Hyman, 50-goal scorer. And on the east side, we've got Adam Fox and the New York Rangers, President's Trophy winning New York Rangers, or President's Trophy, it's not settled. The game isn't over yet tonight, but President's Trophy likely New York Rangers and the Boston Bruins with Jeremy Swayman. Those are four teams that all are, cup contenders, serious cup contenders, that have a Jewish player as either their most important player or their second most important player, which is pretty cool.
My understanding is that the full NHL playoff schedule, I'm not sure if it's completely out yet. I think everything's set, but for some reason, games two and three are like TBD still.
Yes.
I don't know why that is.
It seems
very weird.
I think there's some TV scheduling issues. Right now, I think the last thing to happen tonight is they don't know if Vegas or LA, which one of them is going to play Edmonton and which one of them is going to play, I think it's Dallas. So if it's going to be Mountain Time or Central Time, I think is what makes the difference.
Right. Anyways, this year's Passover, it's going to coincide with maybe your team's second game. So not that critical. I feel like there's been times where Passover has been on a game six or game seven of the first round.
Oh yeah.
Not exactly certain what, all the peculiarities of the NHL scheduling, weirdness every year. But anyways, there will probably be NBA playoff games during the Seder as well.
For sure.
But again, should be the first games of the first round, I think.
Yeah, I think, I know, maybe because Larry has somewhere to be, I think the Leafs are expected to play on Tuesday.
Okay.
And that would leave, the first Seder open. But it's in Boston anyway, so Jeremy Swayman's going to have to miss the second Seder in order to play in the game.
Right. Right. But, the Leafs will be there. At least he can get home to a local Boston Seder if there is one.
Get home to the second half.
Yeah. We should shout out Mench Warmers, former Mench Warmers guest and longstanding Mench Warmers topic, Zach Hyman, was profiled this week in Tablet Magazine by Armin Rosen. In a great, great profile, really extensive, about his growing up history, connection with Judaism, the Jewish sports fans in Alberta who have embraced him. Really, really great piece. So I really recommend everyone check that out.
Yeah, it's terrific.
I think it's an exciting time for Jewish NHL players. It's something we've talked a lot about, and maybe we'll check in again as the rounds progress. Maybe if there's any Jews who make the finals, that would be pretty exciting. I don't think we've had a Jewish player win the Stanley Cup in a while now. So
no, I think it's been a long time. I think it depends what you think about or what, there's debate over Andre Burakovsky.
Right. Well, he won with the Capitals, right?
I think he also won with the Avalanche.
With the Avalanche. Okay.
Either or, sure. But generally speaking, we say, we're not sure yet. So it's been a long time since there's been Swayman. I'm particularly excited about, he'd be the first Jewish goalie, I think, since Peter Ng to really go far in the playoffs. And, Peter Ng, the Leafs backup from when we were like little kids.
And they went far. The Leafs were winning Stanley Cups when you were a little kid. Is that
right? No. He went deep. They made it to the conference finals.
Oh, right. Okay. How long the Leafs? But they've won the second most Stanley Cups ever, right?
Yeah, the second.
So some of those must have been in the last 50 years, right? That
you'd think statistically. You'd think. But no. Generally, I would say in the great tradition of a lot of the sports fan, notable sports teams that Jewish people have followed, the Mets, to an extent, the Cleveland Browns, some teams with big Jewish populations that really just the LA Clippers that continually cannot find a way to get it done. Heartbreak. All right,
but they thought
part of the world.
They thought it was just going to be 40 years in the desert for the Leafs, and we're coming up on decade six here. So,
but we're hoping to stick with the metaphor that Austin Matthews and his 69 goals, his nice 69 goals are the manna that God has brought down. You could say that Brian Burke, the angry GM, hit the stick with the rock, and then the team was in the desert for a long time. Finally, Austin Matthews was gifted upon us like Moses receiving the Ten Commandments.
Next year in Scotiabank Arena.
Yeah, exactly. We're all looking forward to that. Before we move on to the baseball Seder.
I just wanted to say on the round ball side of things, because the NBA playoffs are starting soon. Right now, we don't know yet whether the Sacramento Kings won their play-in game against the New Orleans Pelicans. It seems like they probably will. Unfortunately, for ardent Louisiana Zionists out there, it seems like Zion Williamson is going to miss the game and a few weeks after as well.
Do we call fans of Zion Williams Zionists?
I don't know if there's that many Zion Williamson fans. I feel like there's people who put up with his injury proneness. But yeah, I think they're Zionists on a different stripe.
I mean, the joke here obviously is that you become a long-suffering New Orleans. But there are a lot of New Orleans anti-Zionists who don't care about Israel one way or another. They just don't like Zion Williamson.
But yeah, we remember the Zion Williamson, oft injured. If they make it through, he's going to miss the first round. So, anyways, the point is, if the Kings win, current or future Jewish convert Domas Sabonis will make it into the first round.
And once in future Jewish person.
Yeah, that's it in terms of Jewish sporting interest on the basketball side. In terms of players, maybe if we get deeper into the playoffs, we can start, mining the strength and conditioning coaches of the Celtics and the Nuggets to find some Jewish representation there.
We're going to talk about baseball a lot. But I want to shout out former guest on the pod, Spencer Horowitz, who's off to an amazing start in AAA.
Absolutely.
You know, he's got an OPS over one. Get that kid on the bus. That's all I got to say. Get him across the border.
One other piece of sports news I want to touch on before we get to the Seder is just to give a shout out to Max Homa. He had a great round at the Masters. He had, you know, a 34 hole stretch, I believe, where he didn't bogey or birdie, or maybe he had one bogey, but
yeah, it was
right there in the heart of things. And there was a moment around 3 p.m. where he was briefly tied for the lead with Scheffler, who eventually won, and Morikawa and Auberg, I think. And he faded from there.
Wait, he had a tough. He was tied with Berg?
With Auberg, yeah.
Auberg.
Mm. Yeah. He had a very tough double bogey at 12. That was, I would say, like, not his fault. There's a stupid little shrub just off the green that if you hit your ball into it, it's like, well, sorry, that's a penalty, even though you're 20 feet from the hole. Like, nope, that's a penalty. So that was probably it. Honestly, this is the best showing he's had in a major. This is the best showing he's had at Augusta, certainly. And I really hope this is the year for him. I think to win a major is certainly on the table.
And
he was striking the ball so well
weekend. He would be the first Jewish golfer to win a major that we know of. Corey Pavin did win the 1995 U.S. Open. However, that comes after his discovery of Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. So he was no longer Jewish at the time of his win. So we're not counting him. Max would be the first currently Jewish golfer. One thing I did want to call out to and sort of reference to Max's, you know, everyman, you know, he's sort of got an everyman vibe. He's a really friendly guy. You know, we've spoken to him before. He's extremely nice. He interacts with a lot of his fans. He talked about that one of the things, and I, you know, this is a way for regular people, especially Jewish people, to identify with him. He talked this week that after his Masters success, he treated himself to some pizza, which he doesn't have very often because, to quote, cheese doesn't sit too well with me.
Wow.
Which is a great way to, that's a shout out to the people. I would call that code switching right there.
That's good. That's great. Well, anyways, we will certainly be checking in with Max and all the other Jewish golfers throughout this PGA season. And hopefully we have more nafsas to report about them. Why don't we take a quick break and come back with the third annual Menschwarmers Baseball Seder. Well, thanks everyone for joining us around the Seder table, brightly set. You've had one or two Seders of your own by now, but now it's time for the Baseball Seder. This is our, I would say, extremely middle concept idea for a baseball themed Passover Seder.
Yeah, it's mid.
Not the first to think about. Yeah, it's not high concept, but it's middle. You know, Seder, of course, means order, and in baseball we have the batting order, and we will take you through the Seder, just like it's a batting order, and go through the lineup here. Gabe, as I am, I'm the elder partner in this podcasting duo by several months. I will take the role of leading the Seder.
Please do.
And we'll start, of course, we'll start with the leadoff man, Kadesh. Kadesh is, of course, the Kiddush blessing. Let us consider ourselves blessed because baseball season is upon us again. This is, I think, for me, for lots of baseball fans, it's just sort of the day-to-day of baseball is how you set your life. And having it back in our lives is something truly to celebrate and feel blessed about. And with Kadesh, we pour the first cup of wine. And as we've done in previous years, we will be honoring some of the baseball greats, the Jewish baseball greats from our past, with each cup of wine. And who better to represent the first cup than Hammer and Hank Greenberg.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about Hammer and Hank Greenberg. Couple of things we love about, you know, Hank Greenberg. Legendary Jewish baseball player, fulfilled probably the most Jewish, one of the most American Jewish physical paths, born in Manhattan, New York, died in Beverly Hills. The Jewish dream, the first Jewish baseball player to win MVP, most valuable player, one of the greatest sluggers in baseball history, proudly Jewish, sat out on Rosh Hashanah very, very famously during a pennant race.
Sat out on Yom Kippur.
No, it was Rosh Hashanah. It was Rosh Hashanah.
I think he played Rosh Hashanah, but he didn't play on Yom Kippur.
Hang on, I'm going to look this up.
Okay. While you're doing that, there was something I read the other day, which was very.
Yeah, he didn't play on either, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But of course, the other day was Jackie Robinson Day across Major League Baseball, and there were some sources I saw that talked about how Hank Greenberg is one of the few players who played against Jackie Robinson back in 1947. Who were very openly and publicly welcoming. They had a great, relationship. Jackie Robinson talked about looking up to Hank Greenberg, having experienced similar prejudice to him, and I think that's a wonderful thing to think about in respect to his memory.
Absolutely,
he was a real mensch by all accounts.
And you know, as part of it, one of the things he has said, through his experience with Jackie in the past, is that he faced a lot of anti-Semitic, hatred from fans and players. And he said when he was younger, his Judaism was something he was ashamed of and tried to hide and didn't like being singled out as the only Jewish ball player. But as he got older and after he retired and after he met Jackie, it became something he was incredibly proud of because he wants to be remembered more as a trailblazer and as a icon and as a inspiration rather than someone who was different.
Who better to honor with the first cup of wine than Hank Greenberg?
Than Hammer and Hank Greenberg. To finish the Rosh Hashanah story, Hank came back on the second day and hit two home runs in a pennant race, which led the Detroit Free Press to put Shana Tova in the front page of the headline of the newspaper that day.
Henry Ford shit himself when he saw that.
Exactly, exactly.
if he was still alive, which I'm not positive he was.
In 34? I
guess after World War II?
Hank the Deuce would have been pretty unhappy, too.
Hank the Deuce. I don't know. I think Henry Ford was still alive. I'm sure he
We're going to talk about, we'll do an auto racing episode at some point where we go deep on the purported anti-Semitism of Hank the Deuce.
Sure.
And find some, Jewish drivers in Le Mans in the 1950s.
We'll have to do that sometime. Anyways, moving on to the on-deck circle, we have Lurchatz, the ritual hand-washing. We like just to take this time, it's spring. Hope springs eternal. We take this time to talk about changes, from the previous year. Things that, the pitch clock is pretty much the same, except you have a little bit less time with men on base. I don't know if there's been that many other big changes to baseball. Shohei Ohtani is... moved from Orange County to the Chavez Ravine, where he is definitely not doing any gambling on baseball. Certainly not. I don't know, not much else in terms of the baseball changes over the year, but it's good to wash off the stink of 2023 for everyone, except for Rangers fans. I can't believe they won the World Series. Welcome in the new year. Just wash your hands of it, get ready, get them clean so that they can get, pine tarred up.
Before you have to urinate on them to get the calluses nice and hard. That's the ritual hand washing for like a real baseball veteran.
Yeah, that's right. Who is that? Moises Alou?
Yeah, Moises Alou.
Yeah.
Almost Jewish. Not at all Jewish, but his name was Moses.
Yep. In the hole, we have Karpas. This is when, during the Seder, we dip a vegetable representing the hope of spring into salt water. To represent the tears of slavery. I want to talk about how there really are no green vegetables in baseball. Like, that's like antithetical. The closest thing you can find to a green vegetable in most baseball stadiums, I guess, is relish, which I think that's like Ronald Reagan era. Like, that's maybe that you can call that a vegetable for school lunch.
Yeah, I bet nowadays there's like a sprig of parsley as garnish on like a luxury box salmon.
Yeah. But I did want to highlight three vegetable-ish baseball terms that we can use to represent Karpas. The first is the can of corn.
Yeah.
Of course, a nice meaty fly ball. It's easy to catch, as if it were a can of corn falling from a grocery shelf, I guess. The second is rhubarb. Rhubarb is a vegetable. Did you know that?
Yes. I grow some in my backyard.
Yeah, a perennial. It just comes back. A rhubarb, a baseball brawl. I don't know if people say rhubarb much anymore, but it is an old timey baseball term. Of course, we have taters, which are home runs. Also, not maybe the most used thing anymore.
Mashed.
I just thought about
mashed is used a lot.
That's true. You do say mashed and taters. And then to get caught in the pickle, yep. Get caught between two,
the most Jewish, the most Jewish baseball event, I think, you know, two ways that it's a Jewish one. One, because it's called a pickle, and two, because it's someone who sees both sides and can't really decide which one they settle on.
Right. Moving on to the cleanup spot, we have Yachatz, the hiding of the Afikomen, which is a good reminder at this time that it is for children that we are telling the Passover Seder. It is children who will find the Afikomen, and it's children who will carry the game of baseball forward.
I feel like as I get older, with the hiding of the Afikomen, like baseball, I'm working on my hidden ball trick, like my hidden Afikomen trick. You have all the kids looking one direction and then you hide it in the other direction.
Yes, you know, great metaphor.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'm doing my best on that. I also want to double click on what you said about the next generation. Just a quick aside for everyone. This is only notable because of how not Jewish it is. The three youngest players in baseball right now are all named Jackson.
I know. It's so funny. And it's like, there's going to be a spate. I saw someone say that Liam Hendricks is currently the only Liam to ever play professional baseball. But
in 20 years,
15 years, yeah. We're going to have so many Liams.
There's going to be so many Liams. Oscars, so many Oscars.
I don't know if there's any Jewish Jacksons.
That's why I say it's the opposite. It does not seem like a very Jewish name.
There's probably a few Jewish last name Jacksons, maybe, who like some anglicized name, but I can't think of any Jackson Jews. So
any but a first name Jackson. When you first Google it, there is a debate over whether Jackson in Gilmore Girls is Jewish. I think he is definitely not, personally.
No, definitely not.
Famous Jacksons, Michael, Jesse, notably not fans of the Jews.
Yeah, I guess. Jesse, at least. I don't know about Michael. Anyways, moving on to the five hole, we have Magid. We pour the second cup of wine. In honor of the second cup of wine, I wanted to talk a little bit about Ian Kinsler. Ian Kinsler, of course, the great second baseman, mostly for the Detroit Tigers and the Texas Rangers. Played a little bit in Boston as well. A little bit for the Angels and Padres. But I think notable now in that he is now the manager of Team Israel. He is, signed on. He is on board. He had contributed to Israel's baseball team in the 2020 Olympics. He was there. He's been involved in different ways in the past. But now he's taken on the role of manager. He was managing them in 2023 at the World Baseball Classic. I think he's going to be continuing to be involved in the future. He's been involved with the Texas Rangers, and he was there last year. And he threw out the first pitch.
In an Israel jersey.
In the Team Israel jersey. So he won the World Series with them as I think he's either assistant GM or like a special assistant to the
roving instructor.
Like so yeah, he's around. He's a front office guy.
You know, we talked to Alex Bregman about this moment. Even as somebody on the other team, Bregman's Jewish identity, he told us that, you know, it was incredibly powerful to see that. Big ups to Ian Kinsler for representing the star.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely the greatest second baseman of Jewish heritage in history. So shout out to Ian Kinsler, our second cup this year. Magid, we tell the story of Passover. We're going to tell the story of the baseball season. It's going to be written over the next 135 odd games that they're going to play. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's going to participate in those games are, of course, the players. We can't get through this without talking about the players. Usually at this part in the Seder, we intone as we say the names of the 10 plagues and drop a drop of wine. So if you have a beer would not be handy.
No.
During Passover, whatever if you're drinking something and want to sing along with us as we intone
a kettle
as I intone
juice.
The 10 players. Yeah. And I will intone the 10 players as if they were the 10 plagues. Now these are 10 of the, there's 11 currently who have played this year, but these are the 10 Jewish players who've gotten the most playing time, or that you can think about the most as being important this year. All right, you're ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's do this.
Ahem. All right. Bader, Bregman, Fried, Kramer,
Peterson,
Pilar,
Bird,
Stubbs,
Telez,
Zach Geloff. That was fun.
That was fun. You didn't think to do it by their positions.
Oh, yeah. That would have been a good idea.
Okay.
I don't know. That would have taken... I just tried to do it in a way that phonetically worked with the 10 plagues. Moving on to the next part of the Passover story, we have the four questions for 2024. Four questions that are usually recited about, you know, why is this season, why is this Passover different from all other nights? So we'll talk about why is the 2024 season a little different from all other seasons. The first question, will Max Fried bounce back from multiple injuries that he sustained in 2023 and have a successful 2024? So far, the answer is unfortunately no. He is he's got like a +7 ERA. The Braves are doing okay, but and they did okay without him last year. But I think it's just, you know, these are lingering injuries, and we'll see if he can recover from it.
You know, he grew up idolizing Sandy Koufax, and it is I'm like very afraid every time I see hear about his injury history that he might unfortunately be the next Sandy Koufax.
He did have a better opening day than it seemed like. He got blown up with, I think, a grand slam because he like didn't get a third strike call that would have ended an inning. Like, you know, sometimes baseball is just bad luck. And honestly, it's only been a few starts. Like, he could definitely turn this around and have a great season. But we'll see. You know, I think staying healthy is going to be the big thing for him. He had been pretty healthy up until last year. So I think it's definitely something that we can see for the future. You know, since I saw somewhere that since 2019, I think he's got the most wins behind anyone but Gerrit Cole. So, you know, he's definitely had some significant success. It's just a matter of whether or not he can stay healthy.
Yeah, for the second of the four questions, do we think Zach Geloff could put up a 25-25? I would even say a 30-30 season.
Yeah.
He could go 30-30. He's already got two homers, three stolen bases this recording. He had 14 homers and 14 stolen bases and only 69 games played. So that's half a season.
Yeah.
You know, get a little bit of that rookie rust off. I think he can go 30-30. It's a great question.
Good question. I don't know if he'll do it this year. I mean, he's off to a decent start, a little slow. But next year, they're going to be playing their games in Sacramento in minor league ballpark. Where I think the homers are going to be flying. So that's like a real thing to keep an eye on. I would love to go to that. I'm sure it's so nice. Minor league ballparks are also nice, like so intimate. You know, sad for the fans of Oakland to be losing their team and getting to see Zach Geloff in the future. But, you know, they have him this year. And if you make it out to the Coliseum, you can see him maybe hit a homer, maybe steal a base. I hope he keeps running. Like, I feel like there's been too many guys in baseball.
Yeah.
Who have just been like, yeah, I, you know, I'm a major league ball player now. Like, I don't need to run. And it's like, no, keep stealing bases. They're very valuable. If you do it well.
But he's young enough that maybe the coaches keep giving him the green light.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, that's what he's young. He can bounce back. Like, let the young man cook.
Yeah. Question number three, will Spencer Horwitz get another shot with the Blue Jays this year? Spencer Horwitz is first base and DH for the most part. He is on the 40-man roster, but has not made the major league team. He was with the Jays throughout spring, and he made the majors last year. Had his debut, had a pretty solid debut, like hit well, hit a homer, like, you know, had a pretty good run for a bit.
He's got to be the first guy up. He's having an unbelievable start to the year.
Yeah.
As we mentioned earlier, you know, on the pod before the Seder, he's slashing over 1,000 OPS.
Amazing.
You know, he's leading off and getting on base over 50% of the time. He's got to be the next guy up.
Yeah, you know, sometimes guys in AAA hit so well.
He's a good trade chip.
Yeah, sometimes guys in AAA hit so well that they sort of force the team's hand. It's just like, you can't leave this major league bat down in the minors.
Yep.
He's old enough now that it's not like, you know, oh, he needs to be playing every day. He needs to be working on stuff. I'm sure whatever, he'll benefit from that. But, you know, right now the Jays have Vlad Guerrero, obviously, at first, and Justin Turner as a sort of most of the time DH. Behind them is Daniel Vogelbach. The burly pinch hitter, I would say, at this point, who really cannot...
Yeah, the big beefy boy, Daniel Vogelbach.
Who, while he's been getting on base just fine, he's not hitting homers, and he cannot run a base. Like, I think the benefit of someone like Spencer Horwitz, who doesn't have elite speed, but at least is, like, young and can run a base properly, is...
Yeah, and hustles.
But the Jays have a lot of guys who can play all over the diamond, and young guys who are similar to Spencer's profile... in terms of, you know, not hitting for a ton of power, but getting on base. And we'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see if it could be that he gets traded. I hope he doesn't spend the whole year in the minors, but it could be hard when there's people blocking your path. You know, there's not that many Lou Gehrigs who, you know, get in there when someone else gets injured and stay there forever. So it can be hard to find those spots, right?
And then the fourth final question, as you just mentioned, will there be a Jewish player who wins the World Series?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a few years.
Possible.
Now. So it's sort of been a couple of years since Jock Peterson's run and, you know, Max
and
Reed with the
Bregman
Braves.
Won a couple of years ago.
Yeah. But no one last year.
Yeah. You know, with any luck.
I think probably
we can get Bregman again. We can get Peterson again. Maybe our Blue Jays with Spencer Horwitz.
Yeah. Could be Max Reed. And, you know, it would certainly make a lot of Jews in the tri-state area happy if it was Harrison Bader in the Mets. You know, he's definitely been repping hard. He put the Star of David on his belt the other day.
Yeah, getting all the Jews excited.
That was a lot of fun. Moving on to the sixth spot, Rachatza. We wash our hands again. I wanted to use this one to talk about someone who needs to wash hands, which is the other great Jewish pastime, which is medicine. wanted to talk briefly about Robert Kierlin. He was the doctor who diagnosed Dodger star pitcher Sandy Koufax with arthritis back when he had it in the 60s. He was considered one of the pioneers of sports medicine. He did not invent the Tommy John surgery, obviously, but he was, you know, an early practitioner of that. And in 1996, he was inducted in the Southern California Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. So shout out to Dr. Kierlin, no longer with us. But
love to feature a good doctor on this podcast.
Yeah, that's right. 7, 8, and 9 hitters nobody cares about. So I'm doing these ones together. There's Mutzi Matza, Maror, Koref, Shulchan Oref. It's all getting pushed together.
They're just filling out the table.
These are mostly to do with food. And in the baseball context, I want to talk about ballpark food. I want to shout out yeahthatskosher.com, which keeps a running list of kosher food in various parts of the world. And they highlighted the 2024 kosher options, which are available in 10 different ballparks right now, both the New York ones, both the Chicago ones, Dodger Stadium, but not the Angel Stadium, Lone Depot down in Florida, Busch Stadium, Nationals Park, and the Rogers Center in Toronto, which now has Bay Street Deli, a chain.
Bay
from
Street old- Deli. Is that, given that's the financial center of the country, is that anti-Semitic?
I don't think so, but I don't think of Bay Street as being particularly Jewish. Like, it used to be Old Spadina Avenue, which is like, you know, Jewish garment district. Like, that was the, anyways, but I'm sure it's good. If anyone's had Bay Street Deli down at the Raj, let us know. Moving on to Tzafun, you know, this is when the meal is over. We stretch and enjoy the afikomen. This is the seventh inning stretch of the baseball Seder.
It is.
Last call for beer before
there's stretching, there's relaxing.
Yeah. And so, you know, penultimate drinks here. We should talk about the third cup of wine, and who better to honor the third cup than Al Rosen, the legendary Jewish third baseman, who won an MVP award, who is a very, very proud Jew.
I think Al Rosen might be one of the toughest Jewish people of all time.
Absolutely.
You know, he played third, the hot corner, really tough position to play. Grew up in Miami, you know, on the beach. But then, you know, in the middle of his career, he spent 4 years fighting in the U.S. Navy and World War II.
Yeah, he was in Okinawa.
He also was a champion boxer in military school and at the University of Florida. And then he played minor league baseball, you know, put a pause in his baseball career to go to Okinawa, go to the Navy for 4 years, and then came back and won MVP, 2 home run titles, 4-time All-Star, World Series champion.
And is still, you know, the only player to win both an MVP and Executive of the Year. He had a long career with the Yankees, and then a long time with the Giants as well. He was GM of the Giants for could have been like 15 years or something like that. Someone to look up to as a Jewish hero. Search out Alvarez. Yeah, I would say him and Bregman are our two leading third basemen on the all-time all-Jewish team.
I think
team.
So, yes. And, yeah, you know, I, with all due respect to Bregman, love the guy. Got a couple of years to pass Al Rosen in my rankings, unless he follows what Al Rosen did and start fighting fans who yell anti-Semitic things at him. Al Rosen would literally, like, if somebody called him, you know, the K word or something like that, he would literally fight them in the middle of the game.
Right.
Literally in the middle of the game. He would go fight somebody. He would go into stands and fight fans. Like, that is, like, you know, Alex Bregman should not do that, but it's still really
funny. But if he did, cool. we wouldn't be ashamed. We wouldn't be upset about it.
Yeah, we would not be ashamed of him.
All right. We're coming down towards the end of the Seder. This is the rally time of the ball game. We're going to sing our joyful songs and talk about, all the things that we're celebrating. We're on to the fourth cup of wine now, and I want to make it a little bit of a bittersweet, somber fourth cup. This year at the fourth cup, we're honoring Ken Holtzman, who sadly passed away just this past week on April 14th. Ken Holtzman is a four-time World Series winner. He was on the A's teams that won in the early 70s, and he was a huge part of them. Two-time All-Star, won 20 games in 1973. Those are A's teams that had just like knockout pitching. He won three World Series with them. Yeah, he won three World Series with them, and I think he was on a Yankees team where he didn't pitch in the World Series, but he was on the one of the Reggie Jackson teams in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm. Multiple no-hitters he threw.
Yeah. So, he was a real St. Louis legend, grew up there. I'm sure the St. Louis Jewish community is mourning one of their all-time greats right now. May his memory be a blessing. All the remembrances of him were just about, what a mensch he was. He was involved in amateur sports in St. Louis after his career, involved in the Maccabi
Games. And in Israel.
Yeah. And, he surpassed Sandy in terms of wins in his career. He a very long, solid career. If you don't get credit necessarily for the postseason stuff as well, but if you add that in, he has almost 200 wins, I think. So wanted to remember him. I think was really one of the great Jewish baseball players, one of the great Jewish pitchers mm-hmm. of all time. So let's have our fourth cup of wine in honor of Ken Holtzman and end our Seder now with a little bit of a baseball dianu. If we were only to draft good players, and if those players can become prospects, dianu. If we can add a few players in free agency and none of our pitchers need Tommy John this year, dianu.
If we can just make the wild card game and have a shot in the playoffs, dianu.
If we can win the World Series.
Win the World Series and maybe repeat again next year, dianu.
Yeah. There's always next year. That's a common theme in baseball. That's a common theme in Passover as well. For 29 teams, this year won't end in the promised land. But there's always next year in the World Series. And hopefully next year at the next annual Baseball Seder with the Menschwerbers.
As always, you can find us on the cjon.ca/podcasts and anywhere you get your podcasts. Big thanks to Michael Freeman. And Jamie for writing our wonderful baseball Haggadah. Copies will be available online. that's a joke. We have not printed any. Thank you to Jamie for writing our beautiful Haggadah. As I said, our producer is Michael Freeman. We're brought to you by the Canadian Jewish News. And we hope you all have a wonderful Passover.
Chag Sameach.